Spring is here, and you can now get almost anything you need for your sunny days delivered with Uber Eats. What do we mean by almost? Well, you can't get a well-groomed lawn delivered, but you can get a chicken parmesan delivered. A cabana? That's a no. But a banana? That's a yes. A nice tan? Sorry. Nope. But a box fan? Happily yes. A day of sunshine? No. A box of fine wines? Yes. Uber Eats can definitely get you that. Get almost anything delivered with Uber Eats. Order now. Alcohol in select markets. Product availability may vary by region. See app for details.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita!
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Football is many things. Unpredictable. Exciting. Colourful. Passionate. Absorbing. Expensive.
Venal. Infuriating. Exasperating. Time-consuming. Depressing. But one thing it most certainly is not is a level playing field.
Welcome to the famous sloping pitch.
So, international break. And I kind of feel, Chris, I don't know whether you'd agree with me, that it feels like it's open season for complete madness to come out. I mean, as we know, footballers, the madness is always there, quite close to the surface. But you tend to get a lot of sort of outlandish theories coming out during the international breaks, and projects and suggestions and reorganizations and all those things. And they're all it's like a really shit episode of The Apprentice. You know, they're all half baked. Every single thing there is half baked.
Well, yeah, I mean, football gets to take like a quarter of a breath, doesn't it, for like, yeah, 10 days. As you say, to stir things up and say, you know, we're gonna do this. We're gonna do this better.
Yeah.
We're gonna make this better.
Yeah. And it always makes me think of the car that Homer Simpson designs for his long lost brother Herb, his super extra car, where he thinks it's made completely grotesque by just adding more and more things onto it.
Yeah,
which is what it feels sometimes like where the game's going.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you want to get into that right at the start? We can do. I mean, you know, because it's the IFAB people have been going, we can revamp, we can rebuild it. We have the technology. The VAR, because VAR has been having, as we know, a terrible time in recent weeks. Recent statements by Arsenal and their Mr. Uncontrolled manager, Captain Black, demanding world-class officiating. Apparently, IFAB are going to try and do something about the way technology is used in the game. A revamp, if you will.
To remind me what IFAB stands for, Chris.
International Football Blah Blah Blah.
Okay.
Something like that. And they're the people who dictate the rules for world, or the laws, I would correct
okay.
it, for
okay.
world football. And, you know, I think it's all very well asking for world-class officiating, like, you know, Jamie Carragher or somebody. But have they considered that we might already have world-class officiating? This might actually be what elite-level officiating looks like. I mean, where is better? Where is the grass greener? You know, it seems if you watch football anywhere, that this is the level. This is a good level. You know.
Well, I agree. I mean, there has been talk this week, classically, of, oh, we're going to get rid of VAR, and I'm thinking, exactly along the lines of what you've just said about IFAB, surely we can't just get rid of VAR in the Premiership, can we?
Well, no, we can't. I mean, the Premier League has its own rules, which are not necessarily up to speed with You know, what IFAB will be able to say
real
is...
real life. You know,
yeah. Well, no, for example, the infuriating thing about VAR and offside is that there is a better system. There's a better automated system that we've seen in operation at the World Cup in Qatar, that we've seen in the Champions League, and yet in the Premier League, they haven't okayed this. So IFAB have allowed for automated tech, but the Premier League are behind on this or won't, for whatever reason, accept it. And it seems to me, if you're going to change, you know, what would you do to change? I'll tell you what I would do to change I would not have a VAR person at all. I think the only tech that you should use is tech that is automated. And if it can't be automated, then fuck it for me. I mean, everything. The trouble with the VAR person is the VAR person introduces another layer of subjectivity to it, another layer of subjectivity to every critical decision. So now there are two people thinking about it, and his assistant, and you know, and then they have to arrive at some sort of consensus. And you know, there is an automated offside system. We've seen it working, and you can't argue with that. You can't argue with that. There is nothing subjective about it. And the goal line technology is the other thing. Completely fine. Can't argue with that. It's completely automated. But everything else that that introduces more people to it, more referees to it, is shat up. They can't get red cards right. They can't get the handballs right. Well, I think we just need to remove the VAR from everything.
I think you're right. And I think, you know, if it's just automated, I mean, in the tennis, they don't have a bloke going, well, here's a picture of the ball hitting the line, and therefore it's hitting the line. It's just a picture of it hitting the line. You know, that's it. There's nobody
automated,
to argue
it's
with.
It's automated stuff, yeah. I mean, the thing that I really can't understand, to be honest, is in all the articles there have been in the last little while about how to change VAR to make it better, is calls for the dialogue between officials to be played into the stadium and to the armchair viewer at home. What the fuck would that do? What good? Have none of these people watched match officials MIC'd up and heard the nauseating cheers, mate, atmosphere of these exchanges? The good process, mate, and you know, Ollie, you know, and then they use the nicknames and they don't know which bugger they're talking to. Howard Webb in the latest edition of this crap fest. Spoke for several minutes without saying anything at all, which is his specialty. He managed nearly the whole half hour. But we're open-minded to all technologies that make us more accurate and more efficient was the closest he came to actually commenting on anything. And open-minded to all technology sounds rather ominous to me. More. That's more, not less. That's more. We could be on the road, I think, to full-scale robo-refs. You know, and what about, you know, if you're going to have VAR, why not just have one referee who is the VAR and not have the one on the field and see how that goes. how you get on with that.
Absolutely. Well, I did see that Neil Warnock's dipped his toe into the waters of this argument with his plan for making VAR better, which is actually quite dull and involves having more ex-players involved. Yeah, we've had that. Listen to this. Allow the referee to use his common sense. Which would sound ridiculous if it wasn't for the fact that the government have just appointed a common sense czar. So this is actually enshrined into government now. but also he wants 30 seconds per decision. He wants daylight for offside, which is one of the big arguments that has always gone on. And there's no argument there, is there, if you can have the daylight for offside?
Well, no, if you have the automated offside thing, then what's the problem? You know,
well, and the other thing that he says, which I kind of understand, is you've got to stop watching it in slow motion because actually it gives you a completely different perspective.
Well, this is the VAR deciding red card things, and what they've started to do more and more is you see the referee trot over to the screen to look at what the VAR thinks he's found. And what the VAR thinks he's found is a still photograph of the very worst angle of the thing. It doesn't show the incident at all. He presents the referee, who's trotted to the touchline, presents him with a still photograph, like the Rashford thing in the Europa game. last week. You know, the camera has stopped with Rashford's foot firmly on the guy's ankle, which was a moment in time and not representative of the action. And the Curtis Jones one as well. The Curtis Jones referee, whichever one that was, I can't remember now, but went to the touchline, and there's a picture of Curtis Jones effectively, you know, trying to break the guy's leg, which wasn't reflective of what the moments before and after that happened. And so this is what I'm saying, you know, that you've introduced an extra subjective.
Exactly. And the thing about slow motion is, I mean, I refer, and this may not seem relevant, but I'm going to say it anyway. Hugh Dennis once pointed out to me when we were talking about It's a Wonderful Life, that there's a bit in It's a Wonderful Life towards the end when everybody comes and gives Bailey the money, gives James Stewart's character the money to help him out of this hole. Where if you slow it down, he clearly says, as somebody puts money in the basket, "Well, fuck me." No, it's so clear. It's so clear. But, of course, he doesn't do that. So it just shows you, you can be fooled by these things.
Yeah, not the money. The money's in your house. The money's in Bill's house. Everyone's been piling onto VAR, haven't they, this last week? Jamie Carragher says we've lost more than we've gained, and Gareth Southgate says VAR has spoiled the game. Even Desmond Lynham says VAR has ruined his enjoyment of football. And if you've upset Desmond Lynham, really, you really need to look at yourself, don't you? And I like the comment, did you see, from Roberto De Zerbi, who said he actually actively dislikes 80% of the referees. Yes. But, you know, which means he likes, or is at least indifferent to, a good solid 20%. And that's Roberto De Zerbi for you. He's a glass one-fifth of the way full kind of guy.
He absolutely is. Absolutely is.
The other thing that I've ever been talking about, sorry, I beg your pardon. Talking about is introducing sin bins for dissent into professional football. Now, is that a good idea? I mean, it doesn't seem a terrible idea. If what they're going to do, what they've done this season, it seems to me, is they've completely shat things up by instructing referees to book people for any dissent without modifying the punishment system to reflect this. I mean, you know, there have been, I don't know if you've seen this, there have been 25 red cards already this season. Where in a good proportion of them, I think Ollie McBurnie is the only one who's been sent off for two dissent yellow cards, but a good proportion of them are involved one of the yellow cards is for dissent and one is for something else. Time wasting sometimes, you know. And I think sin bins for dissent, I hadn't realised this while I was reading about this, but sin bins have been introduced in grassroots and junior football in 2019, apparently, where they've proved very successful. 2019 is after my time paying attention to junior football, as my boys were all grown up by then. And I don't play grassroots football because the pitch at Battersea Park is
AstroTurf. But I mean, the thing about having sin bin cards is this is just going to add another 40 minutes onto the game, isn't it? Can you imagine the discussions and the traipsing off and the reluctance and all of that stuff? It's just another excuse for all that.
But yeah, and what if you express dissent at being sent to a sin bin? What then? Do you get sent to another sin bin further back?
Yeah, well, that's the rugby model, isn't it? Of course.
The rugby model was quite interesting during the Rugby World Cup, wasn't it? Where a player get a yellow card and would get sent off for 10 minutes. And during those 10 minutes, the TML would decide whether it was really should have been a red.
It's a bit like having your paper remarked, but in a negative way, isn't it?
It is, without the opportunity to. Yeah, exactly.
And of course, this all reached its culmination, didn't it, in Brazil this week? Did you see that, the Corinthians thing?
Oh yeah, the one where the game is at 1-1 and the keeper stepped aside and let a free kick go into the net. That story. Yeah.
Oh, there was that one. Yes.
There was that one. Yeah. No, that's a different thing to the one that you're thinking of by the look on your face.
No, sorry. Well, I'll tell you. No, the one I'm thinking of is that within 10 minutes of a Corinthians game starting, the Corinthians director of football laid siege to the VAR room.
I didn't see that.
Yeah. Smashing at it with chairs and all sorts of things because I think there'd been a sending off and a goal disallowed. Yeah. Oh, like physical
excellent
stuff.
Excellent. No, I was struck by the Corinthians goalkeeper just stepping aside and letting a free kick go to the net. And when I saw this at first, I thought, you know, the old Corinthians, they used to not try and save penalties because they thought it was unsporting. If there'd been a foul that had deprived the opposition of a goal, they should have the goal, you know. But it wasn't that. It was, you know, his teammates and the manager tearing their hair out with frustration. But it turned out he was the only one who'd seen that it was an indirect free kick. And it hadn't touched anyone. And so the game restarted with a goal kick. But what a nerve. Imagine the nerve to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, who even gives an indirect free kick anymore?
Well, I think that's the point. And actually, do you know, funny enough, when I saw it, I just thought, well, it must be indirect immediately. But then, of course, you very rarely get indirect free kicks these days. So
you hardly ever see them. They've almost died out, haven't they?
No, absolutely, absolutely.
That's interesting. Did you see the talking about things off the television? Do you see the crazy new innovation that TNT, formerly trading as BT Sport, brought in this week? They stuck a body cam on Brennan Johnson to film his warm-up before the Wolves Spurs game see him jogging past his blurry teammates and occasionally seeing his hands wafting up and down in front of the camera. I mean, in many ways, it's the missing piece of the jigsaw, the angle that has remained uncovered, you know, for too long. I do feel as though our insatiable desire to see into every aspect of the football may just have turned out to be satiable.
But so therefore, you know, if it's going to be the warm-up, why not the night before?
Why not two nights before? Stick a body cam on Marcus Rashford and go to his birthday party? You know?
Yeah, exactly. It's like the drugs testing. Each player can randomly be chosen to have a body cam.
For a week. Exactly. Well, Julian Lescott was the pundit. And he was very excited by this. Well, you know, he's very excited by being employed by the same people who are doing it. But he's very excited by this development, and it apparently will give new generations an insight into how football is prepared. New generations, really. You know, I feel like new generations are going to be switching on just before the kickoff so as to avoid this motion sickness inducing nonsense, much like frankly current generations are. I mean, isn't this going to look exactly the same whoever's doing it, isn't it? Or are players going to develop crazy new ways to get a TikTok out of it? Like, you know, warming up with a stuffed toy.
But the whole thing about the warm-up is, if you want to watch it, then just look at it. Because what happens is a warm-up is not confused by the other team running around in the same place, is it?
No. Everyone looks good then, don't they? It's like playing against... I'm always fascinated by the warm-up that Oldham do, where there's a goal, and you know, usually an extra goal on the pitch, and they take in turns to warm up the keeper with shots. And how many of them just can't really hit a fucking barn door when there's no defence at all?
It is amazing how far this has endured. And I went to see Leek Town the other day with my mate Dave Walker, who's a player of a decent stand, very, very good standard. But and they were doing the knock it into the coach on the edge of the area. He'll lay it off. You shoot at the keeper from the edge of the area, which is the baseline of all warming up, isn't it? Yeah. It's a most popular, but also the least effective, I would think. And he said, why do they even bother doing that? It's a most ridiculous thing. He goes, well, you'd be surprised, you know, you connect a couple of times and it just gives you that little bit of confidence. And sure enough, in the first minute, the ball is pinged in, laid off, and thrashed into the roof of the net. I thought, well, fair enough then.
Oh, well, yeah, fair enough. Yeah, no, you remind me of going to watch my son John when he was like 10, 11, primary school game. And the coach our school got a corner. And the coach said, come on, up from the back. Send centre-halves up from the back. And these lads are all, you know, a third of the size of the goalpost. And I'd say to the bloke next to me, it's not like you're sending big blokes up from the back.
No, you know? Exactly.
And then immediately the corner came in and my son John, who was a centre-back, you know, but still tiny, you know, landed on his head, headed it in. Off we go. Complete vindication of the tactic, you know.
It's not a big enough sample.
No, that's true. Did you see, I just wanted to mention that I was watching earlier the Cricket World Cup. It's nearly over, thankfully. I mean, it's over for us already, of course. But I managed to get unexpectedly invested in England finishing in the top eight. So they qualified for the Champions Trophy in 2025, the very next opportunity for us to be humbled by Afghanistan. And I was reminded that my cricket team, an England 11, which you've turned out for many times, played a couple of games a few years ago against Ditchling in Sussex, which was fixed up by our friend Jim Thornton. Yes. And one year we were on their published fixture list, right next to Afghanistan, who were the team they played. I can't remember whether they played them before or after. And look at them now, they're in the Cricket World Cup. You know.
If only you'd stuck at it. you could have been at the World Cup.
Well, I like to think that they were inspired by seeing their country on a fixture list right next to an England 11. And that has inspired their rise to prominence, which is great. Yes. I mean, it'll be a relief for me anyway, not to have to listen to Sean Pollock anymore. Because his accent, oh man. But one game last week, a batsman was on 95 not out, and the number 11 at the other end got a single to make sure he was on strike for the last over. And Pollock said, oh, he's done him a rat favour. He should thank him for that. He should give him an arse cream. And I thought that was unwanted insight into South African motivational techniques.
Yes, I've got to say, your Pollock is not up with your Colonel Hall.
No, I really only tried on two words there. One to make, and one was the punchline.
You should give him an arse cream.
Yeah. But if only he'd said that. What he said was very much an arse cream.
Arse cream.
Apparently, David Beckham was at the World Cup semi-final India-New Zealand game.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, not surprising, I guess. If there's one thing they have loads of in India, it's spice markets. And you know how he loves to wander around a spice market. He loves that.
He does. And I imagine he could get away with wearing his sarong as well.
I imagine he could probably pick up a couple of new. I don't think they're called sarongs in India, but they have the same phenomenon.
Absolutely. Right. I'm going to now, as promised, if that's all right with you.
I've been waiting for this for a week now.
This is me taking one for the team. We talked last week about the fact that Gilly Cooper had released a book about football. Gilly Cooper, the famous bonktastic home counties writer of soft porn novels, mostly centred around the horsey set of Gloucestershire, which is a select world where posh people exercise their loins and horses untouched by real life. So, you know, I actually thought, and the book's called Tackle, I thought, you know, she should be congratulated, Chris, for stepping out of her comfort zone, you know, and tackling, which is obviously the word, a quite different world in a saucily but depressingly titled Tackle.
Tackling, in a way, a world about which it's difficult to believe she knows anything.
You've got to think that. But be fair, you know, it's a bold step. It's a bold step, you know. And I was interested to know what she made of the Working Man's Ballet. Okay. Well, so I'm not going to tell you too much about what happens in the book, because then it would be over in about a second. But I'll tell you some of the things. Right, her protagonist, okay, this is her departure
Should we just, before you start, should we just warn people that there may be spoilers? Has it already been spoiled?
I was going to say that if you want to know what the plot is, read the first two pages and you will know what the plot is. Okay, it's one of those books. All right, so her protagonist, this is her stepping into the world of football, is Rupert Campbell Black, a three-day eventing polo-playing racehorse trainer who ends up in control of Cirston Town, nicknamed the Gallopers, who take the field to the theme from Black Beauty. So she's not stepped too far, I don't think, away from her, you know, her comfort zone.
Well, which is also, of course, the music with Alan Partridge puts on to tidy up his hotel room, which is, you know.
yes, indeed. It is staggering in so many ways. It is staggering. So only people who are upper middle class are allowed to have their speech written in normal words, okay? Everybody else has it exaggerated in a sort of Dick Van Dyke, Cockney, or other way. So there's and in this book about football, there is one character from the North, from the North, who does say things like oop and fook off quite a lot. And all of the working class characters, fook off. Literally, this is what it said. All of the working class characters not only drop their H's and their G's and all those things, but she drops them for them in these things so that you can know where they're from. And most of them have been in care. And this is one of the, I had to work this out after I noticed this little tick. There are more in this book, which covers a lot of football. There are more professional footballers that went to public school than there are Geordies. Okay, which I think again, because there are no Geordies for a start. Anyway, it's all fine. You don't expect it to hit the spot, do you? You know, you expect it to be like a cross between Roy of the Rovers and the Reader's Letters from Penthouse. But it's worse than that. It's written. If I didn't know Gilly Cooper had written it, and somebody had asked me who'd written it, I would have gone for Camilla Parker Bowles. Okay, I don't want to ruin the plot. All right. As I say, if you read the first chapter, you know where you're going. Yeah, go on.
Too late.
Yeah. Okay. Well, all right. Let I'll give you some brief idea. It's about Searston, okay? Searston Rovers, okay? But it's also about their local rivals, Deansgate and Drobenham, all right? And we follow their story as they battle for Champions League qualification and European glory. And the story's made all the more exciting as they're just 10 miles from each other in that football stronghold of... The Cotswolds.
The Cotswolds. Green Rovers.
Well, and we'll come to that in a moment. Now, she's clearly enjoyed the terrace banter. So here's a couple of songs that she makes up for the songs that she'll sing. Okay. You'd better go back to racing, Campbell Black. Poor old Searston will end in tears soon. They're going down. You'll lose your crown. Poor Prince Charmless. Your side's quite harmless.
I see.
Okay, so that's one of them. Then they buy a player called Facundo from Brazil. Facundo's a wonder who'll tear teams asunder. Down the pitch he'll thunder and every goal plunder. Privileged Searston will have nothing to fear soon.
So okay, she likes so that, doesn't she?
Yeah. So let's get on to the football itself. I'm just trying to give you a flavour. All right, nearly every single game in the tradition of all football fantasy is won from at least 3-0 down, all right, with at least two goals in time added on. This is one of my favourite bits. Searston's goalkeeper keeps breaking away and in two games early on beats every player on the other side before scoring, all right? But even in this book, the manager thinks this is risky. So what they have to do, they have to put the goalkeeper on a leash tied to the posts of his own goal so that he can't go further than the edge of his own area. It's just a most fantastic thing.
That's like a sort of baby harness.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So one of those things that rugby players train against, you know, where you get pulled back.
The things that they used to have in It's a Knockout.
Absolutely. Do you know what? It's very much It's a Knockout from start to finish, all right? So they've got three, you know, people who don't earn a lot of money, which are the kit man, okay, the chef and the groundsman, whose nicknames are Kitty, Sheffy and Groundsy.
I was very close.
You were close. Okay, just a couple of other things that please me, just tiny things. I mean, it's a terrible book.
There's a huge poster advertising it at Clapham Junction Station I saw yesterday.
It's
swallowing up all the PR, the book PR.
Another one like the classic Roy the Rovers thing. In the Champions League semi-final, Searston play a German team called Union Beethoven. and there's a lot of sex in it, obviously, very little of it penetrative, between players, stable girls and members of the aristocracy. But the fantastic denouement, which was just, I didn't think it could even go this far, was that Searston, of course, do win the Champions League 5-4 on penalties after the game.
Having been 3-0 down.
No, well, wait for it. After the game had finished after extra time, 7-7 7-7 It finished 7-7 after extra time. but the final nail in the coffin of the whole thing was she does in her acknowledgements, she thanks her football consultants, who include Alex Ferguson,
okay, right,
Alan Kirbishley, Tony Adams, Howard Wilkinson, and her special football consultant, James Norwood of Oldham Athletic.
I'm so proud.
You should be.
He's been looking distracted, frankly. He's been worried that this is coming out.
I think what's happened is he's read the book and he's thinking, well, there's no point waiting till time added on. We'll have three or four then, won't we? And even if we're 3-0 down, it doesn't matter.
Oh, man.
So there you go. Everything comes back to Oldham in the end.
Well, as it does. But I'm presuming that Union Beethoven themselves come from one of three teams within a 10-mile radius. FK Chopin and...
Well, clearly, the great Nazi... Who loved Hitler?
Hitler was the Wagner. Great Nazi.
No, Wagner. 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 Actually, did you actually come out to Ode to Joy? It's difficult for me to describe quite how awful it is.
Well, thank you for taking one for the team.
Taking a bullet for the guys. There's a player called Angus MacLean who, towards the end of the game, makes his debut for England. I mean, for fuck's sake.
Towards the end of a game.
towards the end of the book. Yeah. Anyway, maybe we should take a break at that point. Well, we should have a lie down, and maybe Nick,
you should read something else, like as a sort of palate cleanser.
Nearly anything else.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Sweet Tarts dared to combine sweet and tart. But we didn't stop there. We combined soft and bouncy to bring you new Sweet Tarts Gummies Fruity Splits, a uniquely delicious dual-sided gummy with one side that's sweet and one side that's tart, but entirely smooth and squishy. Mmm, a powerfully perfect combo. Sweet Tarts, dare to combine.
Big news this week. When I heard that a red-faced former national leader with a massive European embarrassment on his CV was back, I assumed someone had offered Steve McLaren a new job. But no, David Cameron, of all people, has returned to politics as the new foreign secretary. Well, well. And as Lord Cameron, to boot. I guess now that the next few World Cups have been allocated, it's safe for him to return to frontline politics. But anyway... Before we linger any further on the exciting and glamorous great offices of state that represent the Premier League of politics, let us first take a squint at the council dog mess monitors of the Vanarama, the league beneath the league, where my team, Oldham Athletic, are currently at the top end of a bunched-up mid-table pack, where 3 points separates ninth-placed Rochdale and Dorking Wanderers in 18th. We are 10th still. 6 points above the drop zone and 5 points behind Gateshead, who sit in the last playoff place after a 6-0 return to form on Saturday, having faltered a bit since their manager Mike Williamson left for MK Dons. They were pining, but they're over him now, apparently. On Saturday, we welcomed Eastleigh to Boundary Park, the Spitfires they're called, I guess on account of their proximity to an airfield. They were, at kickoff, level on points with us and remained so at the final whistle. So like us, they're tangled in the greasy, clinging embrace of the hair and gunk in the mid-table shower drain clog. I watched this game on the National League stream thing, which meant another hour and a half of prime Uncle Roy Butterworth, who I haven't listened to for a little while, and his little sidekick, who I think is called Mike. Mike, rather charmingly, at one point completely surrendered any last vestige of impartiality and started singing along with the Oldham crowd. he was born to be OAFC, apparently, which is good to know. But Roy, bless him, was bothered by some new equipment they've been given. "We've got these new headset microphones," he said, his voice creased with technophobic anxiety. "This wire's going every which way. I feel like John Motson."
they love that, commentator. They love telling you the internet what pies they've been given at half-time, what cups of tea, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, what was the score, by the way, against it was Eastleigh's?
Eastleigh 1-1. I'm coming to that.
1-1. Yeah, no, I was just going to say, I thought it was a great result because the Daily Mail then printed the league table from about 3 years ago, and you were halfway at League One. So that was quite
good. Many, many points. And also a little journey back in time. Yeah. Well, Mickey Mellon has obviously come with a DeLorean, a club DeLorean that can nip back. But anyway, Roy felt like John Motson. And John Motson, of course, the ever constant touchstone for cutting edge broadcasting technology. A man you would never have seen in a headset mic. You'd only ever have seen in a sheepskin coat with one of those microphones that has a lip guard on it. Yeah. But anyway.
And it has Dymo tape on it that says John Snag.
Or L. Reef.
Yes.
But, well, anyway, let me reassure Roy, you don't sound like John Motson. So. "They can hear us in Carolina," Roy said, without specifying whether that was North Carolina or South Carolina. "And we're coming through loud and clear in Betsy Coed," which I think he imagines is some sort of bi-gender university somewhere. As ever, a fascinating insight into the random global nature of the Latinx diaspora. Now, Roy was talking even more constantly than usual, perhaps concerned that his new headset would stop working altogether if he shut up for a second. "I spoke to the ref before the game, and he were nice enough, but he's one of these modern refs, you know." And sure enough, the game was only 26 minutes old when the modern ref gave one of these modern penalties to the away side, one that would never have been given back in the day, where the defender, Sean Hobson, cleared the ball, but the striker crumpled up on the floor under the weight of the disappointment of it all. So 1-0 to Eastleigh. And is there a more depressing result to contemplate than the 1-0 home defeat where the goal is a soft-as-shit penalty? I don't know. I mean, you could make a case, I think. But actually, though, it turned out to be quite a decent game to watch, with some encouraging signs. Josh Lundstrom this week celebrated winning the award for, this is, you know, an award that much sought after, Northwest Non-League Player of Last Season. Which they've taken longer to get around to than the Ballon d'Or for some reason.
Yes, or indeed deciding on whether Gordon's goal was correctly given for Newcastle.
Yes, exactly. And Lundstrom won for his impressive ever-present season in Altrincham's midfield. And then he came to Oldham and immediately got crocked in a pre-season friendly, of course. But he's been making his way back in recent weeks and has been on record saying he can't wait not to be absolutely shattered after 70 minutes. So I guess we haven't seen the best of him up to now. But however partially fit he's been, Saturday's game was a massive step forward for him, I think. On the ball more than anyone else, I reckon. Taking the ball in midfield, running through, driving the team on. Basically just exactly the sort of player we haven't had so far this season. And of course, we still didn't win. But at least it was a step in the right direction. And we did get a point, actually, thanks to a rather good goal. A long diagonal pass from Harrison Maguy that cordially invited Mark Kitching to cross first time from the left, and the gleaming pill was smashed into the roof of the net by Alex Reid. And Reid had missed a couple of very presentable chances and was about to be replaced by Mike Fondop, who promptly had to step away from the fourth official in his number board, sit down and put his coat back on. But Woking on Saturday, where we got absolutely pasted last year, and local trains cancelled for the weekend, naturally.
Perfect. How lovely. I mean, that's what you want. It's something to look forward to, isn't it? Something to look forward to. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Stoker, you know, we're probably, where are you, like 14th, 12th?
No, 10th. We're still 10th.
You're 10th. Yeah. Well, I think we're 14th. And we had another 0-0, which is like five games undefeated and I think four games without conceding a goal. But, you know, all that. You always get this, don't you, when there's an international break coming up, that it's either going to be great for rebuilding or great to just sharpen up the edges of your brilliant run just before it.
Or sack the manager. That's the international break thing, isn't it?
Nobody really knows what's going on. But of course, it being the international break, we've been hearing again, have we not, from our national manager, Gareth Southgate, who's as you've already said, dipped his toe into the argument about VAR, also said that he watched the Tottenham-Chelsea game. And found it very boring, which frightened me a little bit.
Yikes.
That did frighten me. But I found it interesting, I don't know about you, Chris, he said this thing about Ramsdale not playing and how he's going to have to revisit that because if Ramsdale's not playing, he's going to have to think about that. And you're thinking, hold on, you've got Calvin Phillips and Jordan Henderson regularly playing. For England, but not for a top European.
Well, it's funny to put yourself into Gareth Southgate's position for a moment and say, I wonder what the hell he's been looking at, you know. But anyway, games coming up this weekend against Malta and North Macedonia, and Gareth has been keen to stress that we need to win these two games, even though we've already qualified, so as to grab a top seeding in the draw. In which Jurgen Klinsmann will smirk as he draws us to play fucking Belgium again, and Jermaine Genus will host the whole thing surrounded by air hostesses. But club managers clearly got the message about how important this weekend is as they withdrew their players left, right and centre midfield. And Southgate has, again, left Raheem Sterling out. I wonder whether he was watching that Chelsea-Man City game. Because, you know, there were, as well as talking about how brilliant Cole Palmer is and how he's the future of the England team, which it turned out he was the future of the England team the next day when Southgate called him up. But Sterling was brilliant in that game.
Well, yes, but Southgate's in that perfect position of going, you see, I've got him to go away and think about his performances, and it's lifted him up. You know, he's too comfortable that you can't lose in those circumstances, can you? Really?
No, well, you know, and Maddison is out injured, and Bellingham now is out injured, and it's the perfect time to say, Raheem, do you fancy a game? I mean, really, really.
Because he's still young, isn't he? You know, he's still young.
I mean, he's got 82 caps, but, you know, there's miles in him, yeah. And he was miles away the best player, I thought, in that game. But Cole Palmer also looked very useful. And there's been a fair bit of press about Cole Palmer, especially at the weekend, since Chelsea were playing City and Guardiola let him go to Chelsea. And this was his first opportunity to hint heavily that might have been an error. And articles at pains to point him as a normal kid. This last weekend just gone, mentioning that he's looking into hiring a chef to make sure he eats properly, as normal kids do. I mean, he wants to be careful, doesn't he? He doesn't want to be pouring hot water into his own pot noodle. He could pull a muscle.
Well, I mean, the interesting thing about Cole Palmer and indeed Raheem Sterling is that we've had a number of very, very, very good players. Quite apart from Mason Greenwood, who's out of the contention for legal reasons in many ways. And you've also had, you've had Sterling that's sort of drifted by the by. You've got Sancho, who's sort of disappearing, and I know he's not English. You've got Pogba, who's just been banned for 2 years. These are all players that people thought were going to be the great player. And then I think back to Morrison as well. Ravel Morrison, who was apparently the best of the bunch amongst them all. And so you do have to be very careful because, one, it's hard enough to get a professional contract, but then you can easily go, things can go awry very easily after that, can't they?
Yeah. Well, as Southgate said one interesting thing, he said a number of interesting things, but this next one, across Europe, England are seen as an exciting and dangerous attacking team everywhere but here, where he's still tagged as too cautious. And yet, England have topped the goal scoring in the last two qualified tournaments and even topped the goals per game stat, if that's a thing, at the World Cup, even though we got knocked out in the quarterfinals. But if Harry Kane had stuck in that penalty, it would have been even more threatening, you know, on paper anyway. And Kane is doing so well, isn't he, at Bayern at the moment. Two more this week. This is like a weekly story now. Broke the Bundesliga record for most goals after 17 games. Is that really a record?
No, it seems
like only a week since he broke the record for most goals after 16 games. These are not proper records, all right, Germans? They're not proper fucking records.
No. And I remember the first time I was aware of that was, if you remember, there suddenly started to be this conversation about how Gary Lineker had scored so many goals in so many starts. And thinking, hold on, that isn't how it works, is it?
That's not it.
I mean, Gary Lineker, clearly a brilliant goal scorer, but just you're trying to move the definition of what the record is to fit the player so that the current player
in order
is
to
top.
Allow the most recent player to have beaten it.
I mean,
there was a lot of this sort of jiggery pokery towards the end of last season, wasn't it, when Erling Haaland, or was he going to catch Dixie Dean, where poor old Dixie Dean, you know, didn't have the Champions League to play in. But anyway, there's some interesting stuff in the international break, I think. I mean, England and Scotland have already qualified, of course, but among the things that are yet to be decided, Wales is group. Wales are ahead of Croatia, and level on 10 points. They play Armenia on Saturday and Croatia play Latvia. And then next Tuesday, Croatia play Armenia while Wales hosts group leaders Turkey, who will in all likelihood have qualified by then. So the Welsh are two wins from knocking out Croatia, who finished in the top four at the last two World Cups, which would be quite a thing. Because they were struggling, weren't they, a little while ago, Wales, but they seem to have come back with a bit of a surge. And there'll probably be some Nations League bullshit that will allow Croatia to be, you know, in our way anyway later. But then, did you see this? There's Kazakhstan, never qualified for anything, but they're third in Group H, behind Slovenia and Denmark, who play each other, so they can't both get maximum points. And whilst Kazakhstan hosts San Marino, and if Slovenia don't beat Denmark, then Slovenia v Kazakhstan next Monday is a one-off winner-takes-all shootout for qualification for Kazakhstan, which would be...
Then equally, in the last round of games, you know, there was a time in which people were saying that Luxembourg could qualify.
Yeah,
you know,
they've dropped off a little bit, haven't they? I think they still can, but they'd have to win... But they're 5 points behind, and they'd need to win
both
of
their last
games.
Was it not Macedonia that knocked Italy out of the World
Cup
in the end, wasn't it?
Right,
you know, it's,
it was in the playoffs.
We're all
so we've got them on Monday, and Moldova as well, a perennial non-qualifiers. But if they beat Albania, they'll be in a one-off shootout of their own against the Czech Republic to qualify for their first. I mean, this is the biggest, you know, easiest to qualify for them. The most teams qualify, and there's all sorts of Nations League camp back to be. I mean, the Republic of Ireland were supposed to be looking at, weren't they? Whether
if they deliberately lost
to Netherlands, then they would have a better chance of creeping in. But anyway,
in the repechage,
type way that it works.
I mean, we're talking about the easiest way to qualify. I know that you've told me that this came from kind of nowhere, but this idea that Al Nassr could qualify for the UEFA Champions League, which is Ronaldo's team, I think people have grabbed onto it very quickly, not least me. I loved the idea of it, and it reminded me of Australia being allowed to be in Eurovision. But no, that was
Australia being allowed to be in Asia as well for the World Cup.
That's one bit of geography. But to be in Eurovision is a massive thing.
Oh yeah,
you know. We're going hemispheres. Well, we're going hemispheres even in Oceania, aren't we? Whatever. So the Al Nassr thing, you tell me, is a rumor that's come from like one person. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. I read an article about how the idea that Al Nassr would be welcomed, cordially invited into the Champions League, has come from one Saudi journalist who is only a journalist insofar as he describes himself as that in his Twitter / X handle. He doesn't seem to have written any articles. He's just said that this is definitely happening, and it's been picked up by various newspapers and various websites as gospel, where the only source is a nutter and a Ronaldo fanboy who's made it up out of you know, thin air.
Well, that's true, but then how many nutty ideas have then ended up happening? We've seen
you only need Alexander Seferin to pick it up, and you know,
well,
you're
so, aware. So let's say, and we talked about this before about the way that the Saudi League works. Let's say Al Nassr were allowed to play in the Champions League, and given that most of the players in the Saudi League are owned by the Saudi League as opposed to owned by their clubs, presumably they could just put out a best of the Saudi League 11 and call it Al Nassr.
Like an Intercity Fairs Cup team.
Yeah, well, or the Globe the Harlem Globetrotters. Yeah. I mean that's the worrying thing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's interesting to see what's going on in Saudi, obviously, every week. But I noticed that a story that Carlisle United, this will come to Saudi in a moment, just a minute. Carlisle United had the lowest home crowd in their history for the Bristol Street Motors Cup tie against Harrogate, just 716. Or what Stephen Gerrard and Jordan Henderson say. That's a decent turnout.
Sorry, bumper crowd. This is what that's the phrase. Yeah, exactly. That's a bumper crowd.
Making a lot of money on pies this week.
Yeah, vegetarian pies, obviously. Yeah.
Anyway, moving on from the Saudi thing, because it's arrant horse shit. Camel shit, let's say. There's news of another billionaire investor wanting to buy a minority piece of Manchester United. And this guy is called Cooperman. And the club are thought to be particularly vulnerable to potential takeover by the comedy characters of Russ Abbott, as they've been pining for the return of CU Jimmy, the virtually unintelligible Scotsman, for the last 10 years. But Gary Neville is unimpressed. I might just start saying Gary Neville and then stopping, and you can insert is unimpressed yourselves. He's unimpressed because the only way he can be made happy is if the Glazers leave, and anything less is just a sticking plaster. And the Glazers seem perfectly content to still be pantomime villains. It's not like they haven't noticed. And they didn't go to Sir Bobby Charlton's funeral this week because they didn't want to be a distraction, apparently, or they couldn't be asked. I mean, someone they've worked with for many years, surely, in his capacity as the acceptable face of their administration. I mean, I think they could have been bigger than that myself.
I think you can look at that both ways, but I agree with you. They could easily have inveigled themselves into the church itself without anybody noticing they were there and paid their respects. Of course, Eric Ten Hag wasn't there either, because he had a previous and unbreakable commitment. And I immediately think, well, he probably has. Who knows what it is? You don't know what people's lives are.
The thing with Ten Hag is he has a lookalike who's nearly always next to him in the technical area, presumably to confuse assassins. And he could have just sent him to either the funeral or to whatever the other unbreakable thing.
Well, unless he was going to the lookalike's funeral. There's always a possibility.
Yeah. Speaking about Charlton, did you see the story that came alongside the funeral of the youngest Charlton brother, Tommy, I think he's called, and Bobby and Jack got him a ticket for the World Cup final in 1966, but he gave it away because he couldn't afford the 15 quid train ticket down from Ashington.
And 15 quid in 1966?
That's what it said in this story. Oof. And his mum and dad got taken to the game by the Daily Mirror, but he watched it at home on his own on the telly. And the bloke he gave the ticket to cycled down to London and back to watch the game.
I was going to say, if his parents were taken by the Daily Mirror, presumably they were taken on the back of a bike in a big bag and thrown at the ground. It's about 6 in the morning in a sort of Billy Casper way of delivering things. Back to the vagaries of the way that the game is structured these days. Florentino Perez has come out again and said that the European Super League is vital, and there's a couple of interesting quotes, I thought. First of all, he said, football belongs to us all. European football does not belong to the president of UEFA. The Super League is needed more than ever. The clubs are the ones that should control their destiny. Which is, you know, really just going back to exactly where they were before. And the A22 proposals, do you know what that is? That's like the three leagues that they want to have. They want a permanent three leagues. So the Conference and the Europa League and Champions League become literally leagues So if you win the UEFA conference, you go into the UEFA Europa, and then you go into the, which means that, say, Oldham went up four times on the trot and won the Premiership, they would go to the bottom of the conference, the European conference.
I think just for the people at home, it's easier to imagine Stoke doing this. It's just easier.
Well, not much, but okay. Even if we went there, but what would happen is, even if Real Madrid were relegated from La Liga, they would still stay in the top league of the European continent. So it's just the same as we'd always.
Yeah. Now, I mean, the idea that Florentino Perez is speaking on behalf of people who want the clubs to control their destiny, and that these are supposed to, what he's implying is that this is good for fans, and what he means is it's good for him. Basically.
And yes, and money.
It's just
money. It's money blindness all over and over again. But the other one was the Seville manager Orta has suggested that we should have a football Ryder Cup, where the top four teams in England play against the top four teams. Now, I wasn't quite sure how this worked. I presume that, like the Ryder Cup, they should therefore have to have like a five-a-side bit. And also a crossbar challenge bit, and then actual games bit. How does that work at all?
I think we can safely say that hasn't been thought through.
No, well, as indeed virtually nothing. And one thing which I thought might please you because of Bostock's
Cup. I'm always keen on that.
Yeah, the great film written by you and. To which I was adjacent, that two things happened this week, which were that the Bournemouth versus Arsenal under-18s game was cancelled because the coach driver took Arsenal versus Brighton took the team to Bournemouth, which happens in Boston's Cup. But the other thing was, which is a personal memory for me, was that Chester broke down on the M62 on the way to Darlington, and a fans' coach dropped behind them, and the fans got off, and the players got on the fans' coach, and the fans' coach took them to the game.
And the fans waited for the AA with the players. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Which had happened to me and my friends when we played Huddersfield in the reserves many, many years ago, when we saw a broken down coach. And indeed, it was the Stoke team. So those moments can still happen.
Well, it's sweet. There were just, before we wrap up, there were just a couple of other little stories that caught my eye. One, despite years of denial that there was ever any connection between them, Roman Abramovich has now been linked to Vladimir Putin by a new investigation. And it said that a $40 million deal transferred shares in a Russian advertising company to Putin's wallets. And when they say wallets, they don't mean his actual wallets. They mean people who are nicknamed wallets because they look after his money to hide it from any scrutiny. If Putin had $40 million, in his actual wallet, it would have been apparent many years ago because he would have been leaning right over to one side whenever he made a public pronouncement. But the guys who are Putin's wallets are characters straight out of the new Jilly Cooper book, Oligarchs. They shagged their way to billions while their people begged for potatoes. And one mystifyingly, is a concert cellist, the artistic director of St. Petersburg Music House, because of course he is. And the other is a brilliant biochemist turned businessman, and his business is love. And I think, work a little bit harder on your fake backstories, wallets.
and can I just say that two of the characters in Tackle by Jimmy Cooper are his gay son, who is
Who's gay son? The Campbell Black, the owner.
The Campbell Black, yeah. His gay son, who is a brilliant composer.
Okay,
And his boyfriend, husband, who is one of the greatest cellists in the world. So there you are.
With no idea, there is a link there. And the other interesting story that caught my eye was just a little thing in the world of marginal gains, which you've always been interested in, of course. Andros Townsend believes that he's a way to get a little 1%, extra 1%, which is eating chicken feet. which, you know, bless him. But this explains why he's been scratching away at the penalty spot and has been pecking teammates and also getting up very early in the mornings and wanting to make sure everyone else gets up really early as well. But Andros apparently found himself questioning why he was having to take so many supplements and pills and shots in his bid to recover from a serious knee injury. And he's discovered that chicken feet are one of the best natural sources of collagen. And he says it's low on meat, has a lot of cartilage next to the bone. And it's got skin around it. Tell me more about the spices, Andros. Tell me more about the things you do to disguise that it's chicken feet. It's eaten quite commonly in China, apparently, chicken feet, where they also eat bats, and we know how that turned out.
Wouldn't it be better if Andros had just cut to the quick and said, that's neat, that's neat, that's neat, that's neat, you got to love my chicken feet. And people would have understood, well, people of our age.
Well, I had a friend who worked, had a Christmas job, you know, at a turkey farm, factory farm, in the lead up to Christmas. And he said that once they prepared...
Did they have voting there? Was there any voting?
I don't remember there being any voting.
None of the turkeys were allowed because they keep talking about turkeys voting for Christmas. I've never seen it. No, it never happens.
Their votes were taken as read, very much.
Okay. Is it on a Thursday?
No, but the point being that once the turkey carcasses had been prepared for Christmas, you know, and the heads had been chopped off and all the feet and so on, all the leftover bits went into a big bin. And at the end of the week, they were collected by a truck from a pork pie company. So we've all eaten chicken feet, probably. He said, my friend Hugh said, he'd never eaten a pork pie since. But there we are. Oh. I wonder turkey if Cole Palmer will be asking his chef to prepare chicken feet, or is that more a lower end of the table thing?
Well, I think you probably should. I'm certainly going to be talking to my two children immediately after we've finished recording this, which is on Wednesday evening, and saying, you know, you need to get in touch with your real selves and get yourself chefs. That's what
get yourself chefs. Chefs exactly, yeah. like normal kids. And just one last thing before we start, I played football last night, and our friend Howard was back a year after his serious heart operation, playing in goal, which was great. On fine form, and I scored a goal past him, which he dived over Peter Bonetti style. So he's back.
That's good. Yes, and well done for mentioning that you'd scored a goal past man who'd had serious major heart surgery.
It had a valve replacement. It was like kicking a puppy.
Yeah. I remember many, many years ago, and this may well not make it to the final edit, scoring at university, a header from the edge of the area. A cross that was whipped very early, and I was surprisingly ahead of everybody else, and I headed it right to the top corner, and I realised, not knowing before, that the goalkeeper was someone I'd been at school with, who had terminal cancer, and I've never felt so terrible about a goal in my life. I was pleased and a little bit guilty.
Well, Howard is fine, and now heading back to Harrogate away fixtures.
Great! Oh, I'm so pleased. Good. That is good news, and for anybody who has, I know this will sound glib, but anybody who's has friends that have illness, and we're of that age, and those friends come through it, or even if they don't, you know, God, we're there with you. Right along the bloody way, because we're at that age.
Prepared to put a goal past you, whatever's wrong with you.
Yes.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.